All right, the time is 11 minutes past 6. I'm so sorry for coming a bit late. We were rather fixing the connection, so sorry for that. And at least things are now well. And of course, you'll be able to listen to me until the hour of 7:30. So very good morning to you, consumers, producers, policymakers, everyone listening right now all over the world. We greet you. And of course, wherever you're tuning in from, whether it's or through our website, maybe the app, thank you so much for choosing us every day. We really, really, truly appreciate you. I'm your host, Loisa Shimi. And of course, I'll be with you until the hour of 7:30 to keep you informed with the usual updates on economics, entrepreneurship, and of course, a trade policy. But before we start with the update on the values, a current and of course, a pertinent economic matters happening within the Namibia, or rather African continent, be sure to connect with us on our social media platforms, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn, as well as the Village Newspaper page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for the daily news update. That is Eagle FM Media House. And of course, you can be able to get the newspaper alerts. Now, also, do not forget to download the Eagle FM app available on Google Play Store and the App Store, just to keep yourself informed everywhere you go, everywhere you are. Now, to start off internationally, is that this Sierra Leone health authorities are calling for extreme care among the population as an outbreak of mpox intensifies. Now, the West African country has reported more than 3,000 cases since the start of the year, including 14 deaths linked to the diseases. Now, the WHO declared an outbreak of mpox a public health emergency of international concern last August. We might take a listen.
We'll call him Alex. He got infected while on duty, but he sought treatment immediately. After 2 weeks under medical care, Alex is now fully recovered from the disease.
And it was
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy because I have seen different videos of how mpox attacks and targets people. So I was down mentally and physically too. I wasn't okay because I recalled that I have a wife at home, though she can abstain. But I also have a young child who is 10 months old.
Targets a young pekin of the age of 10 months.
Mpox presents symptoms like fever, body aches, and a rash. Alex is encouraging Sierra Leoneans to seek medical assistance as soon as they develop signs of infection.
I call on everyone to adhere to the precautionary measures the government has put in place because mpox is real. Yes, for now, we notice that the death rates are low. And people have the perception that mpox doesn't kill, meaning it isn't bad. But after having gone through the virus, I know what I went through.
Health officials say the lessons learned from a serious Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone and COVID-19 pandemic have helped them tackle the current mpox outbreak more effectively and establish...
million people in this country, and we have 58,300 doses. So definitely, we have to prioritize. One, health workers who are in the front line, contacts of infected persons, because if somebody is infected now, all those around that person are high-risk contacts. So we encourage those to be vaccinated and those that have other underlying ailments, like people that are immune to compromise. So these are actually the priority groups. So if we get more vaccines, we might even review those criteria.
People across Sierra Leone have been urged to avoid close contact with infected persons, practice good hygiene, and follow safety guidelines to prevent further spread of the disease.
As Sierra Leone continues the battle in the mpox virus in a series of public health challenges, communities, caregivers, and the government are racing to respond, drawing on lessons learned from the past and hope for the future. Eric Kawa, reporting for CGTN in Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Other countries across Africa also continue to report mpox cases. Ethiopia recorded its first case this Sunday. A 21-day-old infant has tested positive in Moyale town near the Kenyan border. Subsequent testing confirmed the child's mother is also infected and both of them have been placed in quarantine. The Democratic Republic of Congo remains the epicenter of the outbreak, with both the clade A1 and 1B strains circulating in the country. Over 7,000 confirmed cases and 22 deaths have been recorded in the country since January. Uganda also continues to observe a large outbreak, reporting about 200 new confirmed cases per week. So far, over 4,000 cases and 28 deaths have been reported this year. Burundi, meanwhile, shows signs of declining cases. It is reporting less than 50 new confirmed cases per week, down from over 200 at the peak of the outbreak there.
Right, there you had it from Sierra Leone, where the impact is also spreading among the country. Now, to move on to the next item is that in Zambia, the traders in Choma have taken over a real line where they have constructed market shift stalls. Now, the Parliamentary Committee on Transport, Works and Supply has expressed concern at the alarming level of encroachment by traders. Matakalasen.
Traders trading on the line of rail at the Choma-Zambia railway station in Southern Province. Despite being aware of the dangers of trading along the line of rail, traders here claim to have no market to trade from. But the Parliamentary Committee on Transport, Works and Supply, who visited the Choma railway station, wants a quick solution to this scenario.
That is an active encroachment. And the train does not say, I'm coming at this time. Of course, there will be honking and the rest. That is a very big source of worry to this committee. And we cannot wait. MD, do what you can do there to avoid. Let's be proactive.
We are considering this disastrous outcome. People will be saying, where was the management? The committee came here and they saw the situation. So we want to get an assurance from you, MD. The situation is quite urgent.
However, Zambia Railways management, working together with the Zambia police and the local authority, is putting in more strides to control the situation.
There's a committee that has been constituted, Zambia Railways and the council, so that collectively we can see how best we can handle the issue of the traders who are trading on our land.
About to sign an MOU with Zambia police. I think as of today, DTSDC region manager, let's get in touch with Zambia police as far as the IG to see how we can get the police in Choma to assist us. So that's the immediate.
Right, there you had it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure in South Africa is hosting the 2025 Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium in Cape Town. Now, the event brings together the key stakeholders, experts, and decision makers in the field of infrastructure development. Now, there's Suma Tekalasen.
Being earmarked.
Thank you. In many ways, you can say that the money is not
in business news
on the critical path when you look at the fact that many government departments and even municipalities, the money that they allocated, they are not able to spend all of the money that's allocated for infrastructure, despite the backlogs. So the backlogs outstrip the budget, but we still do not finish what is allocated to us.
What happens then, especially because you and I have had conversations in the past that, you know, even when it comes to some municipalities, for example, it's not only about an issue that money is not there, but it's simply the projects that are also being chosen and also the skills, you know, that are required as well. How then does the minister, even government, ensure that this does not only, remain a symposium and just talk, but it filters down even through to municipal level where we don't see money being sent back and simply not being spent on critical projects?
There are people who are now beginning to realize that with the current configuration of municipalities, it might be just impossible to really have a turnaround. See, here, if you are teaching students and 80% of them fail, we start looking at ourselves as lecturers, that maybe something is not being done right. But in the case of municipalities, we can see increasingly more and more municipalities are in financial distress and becoming more and more dysfunctional. And so we are still parroting the same challenges and saying it's corruption, cadre deployment, and incompetence. But we're starting to think that there are other sources of that problem. There are municipalities that even if those three are eradicated, they're not going to operate properly. So we must start looking at the configuration. Who leads infrastructure in a municipality? Is it the mayor or is it the head of engineering, who is Section 57 manager? So it looks like from a decision-making point of view, and also just the way the systems are structured, the main decision-makers are not the people with the knowledge of what needs to be done. So we are making decisions out of expediency, and municipalities are suffering more and more with infrastructure backlogs, water interruptions, and roads are in a state in many instances.
And is there, you know, when you are looking at this particular, you know, investment as far as it goes when it comes to infrastructure, we are, of course, being told that there's a number of projects that are currently underway. We know that in some of these instances, you and I have touched on, the issue of funding becomes an issue. But do we still need to have many projects running? Or is there a need now for a much more targeted approach, particularly at a sectoral level?
The special infrastructure projects, which tend to be the main focus of this conference, in many ways you can say the fund money has been raised and most of them have been completed. Last year they launched a logbook with a list of all those national projects. And in many ways, it looks like they are doing well in terms of executing them. But those projects will never be enough to make an impact, of, as the Minister of Infrastructure normally says, of turning the country into a construction zone. Mm-hmm. That will really happen if the projects are being done at municipality level, because there are 257 municipalities. And if each municipality has 30 projects, you will start to see the difference. But at national level, these special infrastructure projects, you can only do so much because even the Department of Infrastructure has got capacity problems. So if we can really focus on local government delivery of infrastructure at that level, take capacity there and also change our policies and legislative framework to make it easy to mount a lot of projects at the same time, spend all the infrastructure, the main infrastructure grants, that is where you can see a difference. But until then, I think it will be impossible. It will make these events, and this year they've even invited mayors, which is a very progressive thing to do. So it's got ministers from across the continent, from many countries. It's got our own ministers and MECs, and then it's got mayors as well. But the question is, when we have disasters, there are municipalities that have gone behind, where engineers go behind the politicians' back and say, look, my mayor says bring the money, we are going to rebuild this damaged infrastructure.
Right there, you had it. The time is 25 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. Now to move on to the next item is that the African Bank's profit has increased to 202 million rand, as the number of consumers out using its platform has also risen to 6.1 million. Now the group has a further report net advances of 39.1 billion rand, representing a 20% rise from the previous year. Now income also climbed by 6%, helped an expansion in the business and commercial credit book. Now a 49% expansion has been recorded in the business and commercial banking. We might take a lesson to this, as also the personal banking, on the other hand, advanced only 3%.
Up by that 15%. What does the bank attribute this growth to?
Sam, thanks for having us this afternoon and greetings to your viewers. We've really been delighted by these half-year results. They think they represent a disciplined execution of our Accelerate strategy, which we adopted in 2021, to look at building from the monoline single micro lender that African Bank had been for the last three decades into a data, digital, diversified business that is scalable, that is sustainable, and that offers fully fledged personal, business, and commercial services. The rise from 1.1 million customers at the time to now just over 6.1 million is a testament of the vote of confidence by customers at African Bank, and that is really what is propelled these results that we're talking about this half year.
Let's talk more about that growth in customer numbers, especially because it's such a competitive environment that offers value for money. What is it that African Bank is looking to do differently when it comes to that contest for consumers, clients who are looking to get more money, basically, in terms of saving and what it is that would be affordable for their pockets?
Now, farmers in
KwaZulu-Natal is a very different bank. I always say it is a bank of necessity, founded by black entrepreneurs, opened its doors 50 years ago in Karankua. It has always obsessed about being the bank for the people, by the people, serving the people, a bank that obsesses about the middle and bottom of the pyramid markets in business and commercial segments and in LSMs and personal markets. And so it is a bank that goes where others really find it difficult to go to. So in our service offerings, in our products, we really seek to understand the life journeys of that market segment and offer them services that back them in those life moments. This, I think, is best evidenced by the launching of our Isiko product suites, which help our people move from not just wedding financing, but ilobola, umgeti, all of these life moments where households, individuals really look for a financial services partner that understands who they are, what they are about, and what they need. And so when these customers come to us, as they have over the last few years in drones, I think it's testament that what we are doing really speaks to the promise of African Bank.
An authentic added advantage you speak of there, Kennedy, and African Bank has set new targets for themselves based on what is the near-term outlook as well as confidence that is within the customer base. Do you then have confidence in the domestic economic landscape to ensure that you cater to a market that is quite specific, but at the same time compete with the other broader big banks in South Africa, given the current dispensation?
Well, you're absolutely spot on. The operating environment has been challenging.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
We didn't quite get the reprieve we thought we'd get post-COVID. We did, you know, immediately after COVID, we're hit with high inflation, high food prices, and that's gone to impact household disposable income. You've seen with these results that whilst we've got a very good growth of over 20% in our balance sheet, 49% of that comes from business and commercial, and only 3% benign growth from households and personal banking. So this speaks to the continued tough environment that households are going through. We are confident that things are going to get better. Just like you, we're crossing fingers for the monetary policy to give us some reprieve on Thursday with the interest rates cut. This will help, I think, build on the cuts that we've experienced in the last year and give some breathing space for disposable income. We have seen we've got interventions to help our customers and households, excuse me, which would then see us, I think, grow much stronger, not just with business and commercial in the remainder of the year, but also with personal banking as the economic climate stabilizes.
All right, there you have it. Now, to move on to the next item, which is the last update from the international segment, is that the farmers in KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Eastern Cape are currently battling with outbreak of foot and mouth disease in their livestock. Now, they have said that bearing the cost on their own is becoming more and more difficult. You might take a listen to this.
Most of the situation at this time. And the other one is the economic situation surrounding it. So if you look at a physical size currently, I think the biggest problem is in KwaZulu-Natal. Previously this year, they have increased the disease management area or the DMA, and it's almost two-thirds of the province now, which is a very, very large area. And in that area, there's a large number of farmers as well as animals. That is basically, I want to say, under quarantine. The Eastern Cape situation coming from last year is doing really well, and we think that that DMA might be resolved within the following months. No new cases have been reported there. And then the newest outbreaks was in Mpumalanga one and then in Gauteng one, which is luckily at this stage, it also looks like contained areas. There was a positive farm. They immediately quarantined it with a 10-kilometer radius, but it looks like it's under control. So that's the physical part of it. If we look at the economic part, your guess is as good as mine. The problem is, while we know there's a lot of farmers and animals, we cannot quantify them. There's no numbers available. But what we do know is that the farmers, especially those within the DMA and those in the other provinces that's under quarantine, are basically economically cut off. They cannot sell anything. They cannot move any animals. Wow. And that's where the real concern is.
This is of absolutely massive concern, but I wanted to ask if you could please help me understand this a little bit and just re-educate us, if you will, please. Foot and mouth affects which areas? Can it be ultimately culled, or would you have to cull the animal? Is there a vaccine perhaps for it? Can it even be removed perhaps as well from livestock?
Okay, yeah. That's a lot of questions, but let me give you a little bit of background. So foot and mouth disease, I want to say, almost appears worldwide. There's a lot of countries that has been declared foot and mouth free because there wasn't cases in many years. And South Africa was also, apart from the red zone, that is the zone, I want to say, neighboring the Kruger National Park, where constant surveillance and vaccination took place. The rest of the country previously was also FMD free. I think what's very important is that you get different strains of FMD. So the strains that you typically get in the northern hemisphere are deadly. Cattle, et cetera, dies from it. And so it's a deadly strain. The strains that we get in South Africa and our neighboring countries, SAT1, SAT2, and SAT3, are not deadly strains. So animals get sick, they develop some lesions in their mouth, on their feet, but then they basically heal again. It's a virus, and although humans can transfer it to other animals, it cannot make a human sick. It basically do nothing to you. In South Africa, this is a government-controlled disease. So what that means is that farmers, private industry, etc., may not do anything unless government decide that they will do so.
Wow.
So there is a vaccine available. But we only vaccinate, or not we, the government, only vaccinate farms And in neighboring farms when there was a positive outbreak. The problem is the World Organization of Animal Health basically classify our FMD strains the same as those in the Northern Hemisphere, although ours is not deadly. So if we export meat to a country, they do a test and they get the, they test positive for FMD. It's basically impossible to show if that positive test is from active virus or from a vaccination against foot-and-mouth disease. And that's why you cannot just vaccinate all the animals and try to eradicate the disease that way, because otherwise it might look as if you are sending positive meat overseas, because the test is only for antibodies. And antibodies can be there from the active virus or from the vaccine.
Okay, so what does this mean for our poultry and our livestock and our meat then, if you'll share, Dr. Maria? Does that mean we're bound to see a situation where we're going to struggle with the availability of meat and livestock for some time?
No, I don't think in this case. I think what's very important, you also now mentioned poultry. Now, foot and mouth disease in South Africa is a disease that basically affects cloven-hoofed animals. So it's cattle, sheep, goats, as well as pigs. And then wild animals, buffalo, et cetera, can also get a disease. But a poultry sector is not part of the foot and mouth problem. So in terms of the availability, yes, currently in KwaZulu-Natal, there's a big problem as those animals are basically out of the market. All right. But it is at least the rest of the country still open for slaughter and trade and so on. So the supply from KwaZulu-Natal might limit, or the animals from KwaZulu-Natal that cannot enter the market might limit the supply a little bit at this stage. But on the other hand, we also saw that China have closed its borders. That's a very bad thing, as they take 14% of our exports. So that 14% of the export, that meat is coming back to the local market.
All right, there you have it. The time is 2:38 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. We can go into a very short commercial break, and then once we return, we'll take you through the local news update. Please stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina Omjo. Chicago Shafasanana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuitemoshiwana, E. Moyao, or Tangongotisa Mene. Anageshefa ya Namibia, ombitomba na wa oronjika. Zeitha nina omayakuro ni randitoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nena. Kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo, dengira selma, konaraje tatuimu. Datundatu, heari hamano tano, oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, the time is 40 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Welcome back, and if you just joined us right now, a very good morning to you, and this is early morning scoop. Welcome. This is a show where we give you the economic entrepreneurship trade policy, and that's what we give you until the hour of 7:30. Now, to start off locally, is that the Namibian President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah embarked on a landscape diplomatic tour across Southern Africa in May 2025, visiting Angola, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique, and Tanzania. Now, this tower underscored her commitment to deepening regional ties within the Southern African Development Community, that is SADC, and advancing economic cooperation through a joint infrastructure program, trade facilitation, and energy partnership. During her visit to Mozambique, a discussion between the two presidents focused on trade, youth development, and energy cooperation plant. And however, for some, this visit to SADC countries signals a fresh start within, without dependency on European countries. Now, my colleague Joseph Jeremiah engaged with our in-house political analyst Helmut Mahongo for more insight. We might take a listen.
Good morning. This is Joseph Jeremiah speaking from Eagle FM. I'm currently joined by my colleague Helmut Mahongo. So, due to my understanding, he's one of the guys that are politically educated. There's another matter here at hand, which is now our president visiting SADC countries, which was last week or a week ago.
Politically interested.
Yeah, politically interested, we say.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Helmut, thank you for stealing. Thank you for joining me here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we have seen that our president has visited SADC countries, right?
Yeah, on the SADC work visit, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, which for me is a great initiative.
Yeah.
We have, not a lot have done it. So, in your view, what is the significance of that with regards to economic diplomacy?
The significance, I'll just speak one of her work visit that is, the one that I followed, more in detail compared to others was the one in Mozambique.
Yes.
Yeah, where she met the current president of Mozambique, that's President Daniel Chapo.
Yeah.
And one of the things that she said in her speech while she was in Mozambique was, it's time to strengthen, she basically called for stronger collaboration on the, between Namibia and Mozambique on the economic front. Now, stronger collaboration on economic front is something that I find, I personally find fascinating, because if you look at the African continent,
yeah,
there is not a lot of economic activities going on between African countries. There's a lot of economic activities going on between all 54 states of the continent with outside, with outside countries. I'm talking about countries outside the African continent. But trading amongst ourselves, we're still in a rudimentary stage in that department. So, hearing her calling for stronger economic ties with another African country is something that I saw that we could be on the right direction towards the Africa continental free trade area here.
Okay, sir. So, after that, does this signal a better future for Africa, where we discuss our matters without having to ask for assistance from European countries?
Asking for assistance in general is not really a bad thing. It's just that we are looking at it as a bad thing now because of the degree of dependency. It has grown too. So, I'm one of those people that criticize the way that we do things as Africans, especially yes. on the leadership level. And take, for example, in 2022, there was the US-Africa Summit, 2023, Russia-Africa Summit, 2024 in January. Now, that was my favorite. There was the Italy-Africa Summit. So that's when I went through all these summits, summits, because we're in that line of work where we have to talk about these things. And I'm looking at the question I can't stop asking myself is that why does everyone else have a plan except for Africa?
Africa, yeah.
Now, exactly. Yesterday we celebrated Africa Day, and that took us basically back to the one of the not very good memories of. Of obviously colonialism and then the founding of the African Union in 1963. which has now morphed into the Organization of African Union before it morphed into the African Organization of African Unity before it morphed into the African, we changed it. It didn't morph. It's not a chameleon. Before it changed it, yeah, before we changed it to African Union.
Yes.
Yeah, but the organization itself from its founding has been, more political. It did not have a lot of economic aspects. That is until we obviously came to that realization, and then we started, basically came up with the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, which is supposed to be a predominantly economic arm of African states relations.
Okay, sir. Thank you for having me interview you with regards to that matter, because it has been bothering me ever since.
No, not a problem.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
All right, the time is 46 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, there you heard from Hermut just describing the tower as a foundation for a brighter future for Africa as it lays the groundwork for free trade across the continent. Now, during the president's visit, the Mozambique, she called for stronger collaboration on economic fronts. That's what Hermut also said there. So now, on that regard, we can take a lesson to the next item, whereby the city of Windhoek has intensified its crackdown on street vendors operating in the Central Business District, CBD, after complaints from larger businesses. Now, this is not for the first time local authorities have crashed with street vendors across the country. Now, to discuss this, we will be engaging economic Abraham Aita on what sustainable approach that can be implemented to ensure all small traders and big businesses coexist in this regard. We might take a lesson.
Yes, a very good afternoon to you, sir.
How are you, sir?
I don't know. We are very good. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for making time to talk to us at Eagle FM.
Okay.
Yeah, no, what we are looking at is the city of Windhoek has just announced that, yes, it has enhanced its law enforcing order regarding street vendors, regarding street vendors, especially those ones that are operating within the Central Business District.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what we want to assess is this. We know that this is not the first time vendors across the country are being chased away or being pushed to go somewhere because the formal businesses are not happy with them being in front of their business and things like that. And I think at this level as a country, we needed to find a modality, a model of coexistence. Now, here we have formal businesses that are complaining to the city of Windhoek. Here we have vendors that are chasing the foot traffic in front of these big businesses. Now, as an economist or as an observer of the economy, is it possible to find a model where the bigger formal business and the vendors existing? Is it possible, especially within the Central Business District? What is your view on that?
Okay. The first thing I think we actually need to look at is we need to look at this whole thing holistically from the side of the retailers and also from the side of the vendors. Now, it makes logical sense that as a business individual who is licensed, because remember these guys, the retailers, they actually do have the license to operate.
Mm.
You would not actually want someone actually in front of your shop selling the same product that you know you can offer.
Mm.
It's not necessarily the same, but to a certain extent, there's always somehow something that is being sold by the vendor that is also in the shop.
Mm.
But then in terms of the vendors, look, the vendors are these are self-employed individuals who are really, in most cases, and in a country like Namibia, these small vendors or the self-employed individuals are actually the backbone of the economy.
Mm.
Because remember, these guys, they keep the money flowing. It's a thing of the velocity. Money changes hands.
Mm.
But in terms of the model, I think with the right policy and planning from the government, they can actually coexist. If I take a classical example, is that of, let's say, Stop and Shop. We have Stop and Shop. We also have the guys who are at Capitura Pick and Pay.
Black Shade.
There are guys who actually who are out there. And they are actually catering to that insufficient need of items that are not in the store. For instance, if you go in a shop and you are trying to buy a packet of tomatoes and it's not in Pick and Pay, then you know you can get it outside from the vendors at a very affordable price. So initially, what the government can then do in this case, or let's say city, the municipality, right? What they can do in this case is they should design a zoning for the vendors. One, I think one that is working perfectly fine is if you go in Venue. Venue just say, because you're not back and they are not in front of any shop. They are not standing in front of any shop. They just have their own area, which is designated for them, where they just sell. You can get a fat cake at a very affordable price. While in the store, a fat cake, I pay again $8. I'm not sure what the price now, but I think it's $8. But you can get it from the vendor at a very cheap price. And also, another thing that we need to observe is that when the vendors are selling this product, they are selling it because of the shortage, right? And they are chasing the food chain. But wouldn't it be recommendable if the retailers and the vendors can come together and say, you know what? You have this in abundance. Let me supply to you this. And then should there be a shortage, I then continue to supply. And then like that, everybody is getting a chance to participate in the whole chain of selling off the products. So it shouldn't be a thing of chasing people away from city center. You cannot chase people away from the CBD because this is where most of the activities take place. So you want to be where the customers are. That is where you want to get your product out. So it is recommendable that they actually zone out. If you are going to then tell these guys to say, okay, which is very understandable, move away from the shop, move away from the front of the shop because of we need to observe protocol. Also, there needs to be an orderly manner. You can't just be selling your product in front of someone else's business. Then you move them to the side. You say, okay, this is an open market. This is where perfect competition happens. You can go to vendor A. They sell the same product as vendor 2. They sell for the same price. And everybody gets to participate. Now, it's the customer's choice. Do you want to go to... The customer should have a choice of choosing. If I cannot afford what is in the store, then at least just next to the store, there is a market where the vendors are operating and I can buy from them at an affordable price.
Yeah. And I think that is where we also, we have this question to say, looking at our town architectures or design, we think perhaps there is no inclusion of smaller enterprises. And I think that is where now the bigger business are getting this type of behavior that they are renting the space. You did not tell us there are vendors or something like that. Are we perhaps maybe going forward when we are designing these malls, we are designing this big infrastructure, can we also perhaps include small spaces for vendors? Like what I have seen even Groove Mall inside there, they have created small stalls for those people that are selling sweets and things like that. Can that be like the future of designing cities and town and all these bigger malls that are more inclusive?
It definitely should be the future. And just to backtrack, it should have been part of the whole setup from back then. Because you need to understand the dynamics of the Namibian economy. There are so many regulations and so many policies that are outdated that takes a lot of time for you to actually recognize that these guys that are just selling there on the street, these guys are the ones that are actually, they are the ones that are the backbone of the economy. We are talking about people who actually make a living to actually groom the future generation.
Mm.
So they should actually be included. They should have been included in that model. And going forward, mm. and I want to really motivate to say that as a customer, you should be afforded the choice to choose what your pocket can afford and cannot afford.
Yeah.
I do not want to walk into a mall with $50. And this is now basic economics where you have to draw opportunity cost.
Mm.
I don't want to walk in a shop having drafted a list of to say, I want tomatoes, I want a bag of sweets, and I want knickknacks. Mm. And then I enter the store and I find out that the bag of knickknacks is $30. The sack of tomatoes is $20. Then I don't get to buy sweets.
Mm.
I should be able to say, I walk in the mall, I buy the bag of chips for $30,
mm-hmm.
but I still have the choice of going outside and actually dividing the $20 mm-hmm. amongst the sack of tomatoes and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should be included.
Mm-hmm.
The same way the retailer is making money should be the same way that a vendor is also afforded the opportunity to make money. Namibia is a country where we have so many inequalities. And these are part of the things that contribute to that is because we are not including everyone in the value chain.
Mm.
You say, come up with your own business. Okay. I come up with a business of actually selling, products to people, but then I come to realize that I'm actually not part of the whole setup.
Mm.
And most of these retail shops that are selling here, they are not Namibian owned. These are multinational companies,
mm-hmm.
companies that are coming from abroad to come set up here and then provide this product.
Mm-hmm.
We actually need to create a market, and I want to say perfect competition where the playing field is level for everyone. We understand that, okay, we're in a country where most of our people are part of the informal sector.
Mm-hmm.
We need to create a market for them to actually sell their products. Let's keep the money flowing within the country.
Mm.
The more it flows, the more everybody gets a chunk of the pie.
Mm. And I think perhaps maybe our last question then, at the policy level, what are your advice, the recommendation now to the policymakers? Because we know there are those that are listening. And looking at the SODECO, the structure for our new National Assembly or Parliament, we have a lot of young people there. We have also those ones that are coming from the informal sector. And I think perhaps what are your recommendations or some of the advice in terms of policies to enable now or to facilitate what we just actually advocated for?
Okay. So in terms of the first thing we need to do is we need to establish a policy which is designed to zone out when facilities are being set up,
mm.
such as malls and all of this. They should be set up to ensure that a section of that is also catered to those who are vendors.
Mm.
And then we need to have a time-based model. We need to have a time-based model.
Mm.
Okay. If we say, okay, we don't want the vendors to sell in front of shops.
Mm.
Remember, everyone is trying to make a living here and we are all trying to actually provide, to provide for our needs.
Mm.
So we need to have a time-based sharing model to say, okay, let's say from, vendors are permitted to sell.
Mm.
If you are going to be next to a shop, you should be permitted to sell on specific days, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can sell on a Saturday. I think shops, they close at 3.
Mm-hmm.
You should be selling from Saturday, let's say 12 mm-hmm. to 6
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, and then we need, most people will argue to say, no, but the products that are being sold by these guys are not tested, they are not refined, they are not processed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we need to do is we need to provide training
mm-hmm.
as as a government, we need to provide training to our people and ensure that they are properly licensed in order for them to continue participating. Because we don't support the vendors at all. We don't. It's unless, of course, I send you a text message to say, no, Gabriel, please go support me, Maria, who is at Stop and Shop. And then we start to create that awareness and all of that. But we need to try and provide training to these people. And then in terms of the legal framework, we need to pass on laws which are inclusive and they actually recognize the rights of these people. As much as I am a vendor and I am not licensed, I still have the right to participate in the selling of products. And then the guidelines should be clear and they should not prohibit me from actually selling anywhere within the country unless it is prohibited. I should be allocated an area, a market space where I can operate. The classical example is where you gave of the stores. So we need to ensure that all of this is stipulated in all the regulations when it comes to supporting our vendors.
Yes, Mr. Ita, thank you so much for making time to talk to us today. And I think this conversation will continue. As you mentioned, even training, perhaps we should also reach out. We will also reach out in the future on maybe what type of training our vendors need. How do we can we continuously capacitate them to be able even to participate within the Central Business District? Thank you so much for making time.
You're very much welcome. Cheers. Have a lovely day.
All right, there you had it. The ATA emphasized the importance of street vendors in the economy, just noting that they keep money flowing in the economy. However, he also indicated that with the right policies and planning, vendors and businesses can coexist. Now, to move on to the next item, actually linked on this one, is that we turn to Bruta Usiku, an expert in urban and town planning and a researcher specializing in formal economies within urban spaces. Now, to explore this matter further, Nyilu Nanye, Michael Petrus engaged in a conversation with Usiku just to dive deeper into the situation of street vendors and, of course, examine whether they are being considered in urban development plans and what the way forward might be. We might take a listen.
Today, we are joined with Butel Usiku, the expert in urban and town planning, as well as a researcher in a focal area of informal economies within urban spaces. Mr. Usiku, how are you doing today?
No, I'm doing well. How is it?
I'm okay. We're so glad to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, okay, to get into the topic, in the heart of the Central Business District of Windhoek, A crackdown on the street vendors is causing growing concern. The authorities have begun enforcing up to, I believe, 500 Namibian dollars worth of fines on informal traders. And by inciting by violations and complaints from businesses and residents, this is still going on. However, many vendors rely on this trade for their daily survival and they feel it's unfair to target them. So, my question is there a better way to manage informal trade while respecting the livelihoods of those affected?
Yes. Thank you for the question. I understand, and it's a bone of contention these days. Now, back to the question. Well, actually, yes, there are actually better ways to leverage on, I mean, to strike a balance between informal economics and the municipal bylaw. First, it's through collaborative effort between the law enforcer and the informal traders. This would basically involve engagement where the law enforcement and the other representative from the municipal council would enlighten the informal traders on the municipal bylaws concerning informal trading activities, also to enlighten them on the possible penalties. And also to bring it to their attention that, though their action may be seen, barbaric, collaborative effort between, the law enforcer and the informal traders. This would basically involve, engagement where the law enforcement and the other representative from the municipal council would enlighten the informal traders on the municipal bylaws concerning informal trading activities, mm-hmm. also to enlighten them on the possible penalties, and also to bring it to their attention that though their action may be seen barbaric, mm-hmm. however, within the provision of the Local Authorities Act, that by virtue of Section 94, paragraph, this paragraph I3, that the municipal council conferred legal mandate, right. to formulate bylaws regarding the subject matter, which in this case, the municipality of Windhoek have gazetted the informal policy, I mean, informal bylaw that was gazetted in 2007. Mm. So it's now the issue of awareness. And beside that, beside the trading regulation that were gazetted in 2007, the municipality also have a system of permits, vending permits, which can be acquired, mm-hmm. at the municipal council and permit give sort of permission to informal traders to engage on informal activities at certain designated areas within the CBD. Mm. Yes.
Okay. Now, to further expand on that, you know, when people such as yourself, you know, when you're planning to come up with, you know, town infrastructure and planning, you know, the areas in which people sell, do you consider the vendors in terms of allocating spaces for them to actually sell their goods?
Well, yes, the consideration is made not necessarily to the vendors, but we have, I mean, according to the planning laws, there's this element of public element in town planning, which entails that planners have to engage the views of the communities. Now, within the community, that's where the vendors exist. Mm. However, the situation at hand is that most of the township, we call them, most informal activities are taking place at places that were planned and developed before independence. And by that time, as late as 1970s to 1980s, such vendors, such activities were non-existent. Mm. So now what this led to a situation whereby you have planned areas that were only planned based on the need to fit the need of the people at the time, which mostly focuses on the need of business and did not incorporate vendors since they were not existent. Now, the situation that is at hand is that if informal traders emerge later, but then this is now in conflict with the municipal bylaws and the zoning. The zoning is to say certain land parcels within the cities are allocated to certain uses, to say a certain parcel of land may only be used for commercial activities, for instance, or institutional or residential and other activities that do not conform with the regulations may not be executed.
Mm.
So, yes.
Yeah. So, Mr. Usiku, regarding that as well, how does the city, in your expert opinion, how does the city plan to balance law enforcement, you know, with the need for people to earn a living?
I just need to clear this to the dear listeners that I'm speaking in my personal capacity, not mm-hmm. on my view, do not reflect that of the city of Windhoek.
Mm.
So in that instance, the city, there are certain interventions that the city is exploring to create a space where informal activities can coexist with the formal activity. This is now, for example, upgrading certain spaces around certain certain spaces within the city. When we talk about spaces, we refer to perhaps now the spaces around the major cities. I mean the city roads, like those, the public open spaces where there are plans to put up some temporary sort of structures that can accommodate this type of activities depending on the needs and the desirability. Mm-hmm. So I have to clear it because of the regulations, there are restrictions in terms of where these activities can take place. So, however, now the city is exploring avenues to put up temporary structures to accommodate informal traders at places where that are deemed to be very safe for both the traders and their customers. Mm-hmm. Because yes, and also taking cognizance of the overall cleanness of the city, there are certain requirements that have to be fulfilled. There must be the proper waste management. We do not want a city that is too dirty. I mean, that is littered with litter scattered all over. Remember, Windhoek is among the cleanest city in the world. Right. So they have to make sure it retains and keep that status.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, it is public knowledge that there are, you know, certain areas designated to, you know, informal, selling, basically. Now, like, for example, the Katutura, you know, single quarters, such, but in your own expert opinion, are these designated areas, you know, for informal traders adequate? And can they access customers from such areas? I mean, you know, it clearly doesn't get that much foot traffic from people all over Windhoek. So I want to know what your opinion is on that.
Well, I wouldn't say they are enough or not enough, because now we have to look at the resource constraint at the city, the financial resource constraint at the city, and also the availability of space. Much of the space in Windhoek is already consumed by either housing and other activities, which make it quite difficult to find open spaces that are actually suitable to set up open markets. But I would say it makes a difference because now that those open markets they cater for the needs of a proportion of people who are engaged in informal economic activity. Unfortunately, given now, and I must explain that when these open markets were designed, they were designed based on the demand at the time. Now, as the population grows, it led to a point where the demand exceeds outweighs the ability of the city to provide such infrastructure to cater for these informal activities. Mm-hmm. And that's why it become quite a challenge to accommodate everyone in those informal markets.
Mm.
Yes.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Usiku. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Okay.
All right. There you had it. Now, there Usiku just addressed the ongoing issue of street vendors being removed from the central business district, that is CBD, and urged vendors to cooperate with law enforcement. Now, to move on to the next item is that as we celebrate Africa Day, it's important also to reflect on the critical role entrepreneurs place in shaping the continent's economic future. Now, entrepreneurs are not just business owners. They are also catalysts for innovation, job creation, and sustainable development. Now, with that in mind, we spoke to entrepreneur Julia Haimbodi, just also to share her insight on the type of businesses and strategies that can drive Africa forward. We might take a listen.
Yes, a very good morning to you, Madam Juliana. Welcome to Eagle FM.
Thank you so much.
Yes. The main reason we are contacting you today is that we are talking to a number of entrepreneurs.
Right.
And the main reason is that we are just continuing this conversation, which is stemming from the 25th of May, which is a day that we celebrate about the African continent and things like that. And when we celebrate, we also get to reflect how far Africa is and what we have achieved and things like that.
Correct.
And in that regard, we are also just trying now to assess or to talk to our entrepreneurs. What is that entrepreneurs now need to do to take Africa to the level where it's supposed to be? Everybody's saying Africa is not where it's supposed to be yet. And we know this task in many circumstances, people think like it's a task of politicians and others. But from our side, we think entrepreneurs have such a great role in terms of taking Africa to that level. What is that entrepreneurs now that need to do to take Africa to that level where it's supposed to be?
All right. Thank you so much for having me this day. And I am also pleased to share my knowledge, my experiences as an entrepreneur within the African continent, more specifically in Namibia. Yeah. So I believe that as Africans, we have common challenges. We have common purpose, obviously. And coming into business right now, the thing that I'm mostly seeing that the African entrepreneurs can take advantage of is the newly introduced African continent free trade. Of where African, I'm not quite sure about the numbers, but I think it's about 55 countries that have joined. Yes, they have joined the African continent free trade, which is aiming to strengthen the competitiveness of the African businesses. And it's also under a legal framework that is binding. So meaning that obviously we already know that the Westerns would always step in, but if it's binding, then I believe it only serves the African continent businesses. So this African continent free trade obviously will enhance the economic growth of Africa if we all work together as a unity. It will promote regional value chains. Obviously, what we need to do is just to unify as Africans. So our leaders, I think they've already paved the way in this sentiment by introducing this free trade within the continent. Because we believe that Africa is quite a resourceful country, I mean continent, very resourceful. As Africans, we are intelligent. We have everything that the world have. It's just that we are painted or painted to be in a crisis. But in all truth, the whole world is in a crisis. But Africans, we are just painted to be having more problems than any other nation. But that is not the case. So we should not believe that we are in a crisis. But the whole nation is in a, I mean, the whole world is in a crisis. So we should just really have strength, have the positivities that we can make use of our resources. We can add value to our resources. If we can, that will also include now the political system, obviously. The political system, that they should help businesses, you know, to be able to, with the policies that will be able to meet the needs of the businesses.
That actually comes into my second question now, where, as you have indicated, that the entrepreneurs need to take advantage of the free trade agreement and other bilateral agreement within the continent. Also, now we also now, as an entrepreneur, you are more practical compared to me, which is as an analyst outside. You are on the ground. Perhaps what is that now that you need from African leaders? We know they meet a lot. Our president even visited the SADC leaders, I think last week. What is that that you need from the African leaders? What is that they need to do to enable you as an entrepreneur to do the value addition and to solve most of African problem through your service or through your product? What is that you need from them?
In Africa, being an African, what I believe when we talk of leadership in Africa, we are talking of political leaders. We are talking of traditional leaders. We have church leaders. We have educational leaders. So all these, this whole composition form leadership in Africa. Because Africans, we believe in Ubuntu, which is I am what I am because of who we all are. So it's basically humanity. That is how we are raised as Africans. So we should not leave our value, but be inclusive of all these leaders to shape the nation and to shape our communities. So if only our leaders can make some adjustments to the system that we are using. And when we talk of the system, particularly from my side, there are three, they are in three categories. So we have the political system, we have the economic system, and we have the educational system. So when it comes to the political system, we are in a democratic country, right? So I just feel that democracy should be guided because we are taking it in a raw form, But the source of democracy, where was it implemented? Where was it structured?
Mm.
It's not in Africa.
Yeah.
So it's speaking more to the Western countries than it is to Africans.
Yeah.
So for us to adapt this system,
mm-hmm.
I believe we need to guide it well
mm-hmm.
so that it can meet the needs of our African people.
Yeah.
Because our needs are not the same needs of those that are in Western countries, because they're like 150 years ahead of us.
Yeah.
So definitely we cannot have same challenges and same needs.
Mm-hmm.
So if our political leaders
mm-hmm.
can just change some of, guide the democratic policy, like in alignment with the needs of our people, of which I'll commend our current president.
Mm-hmm.
She have given a mandate to the cabinet to alter any policy that they feel is not working for our country.
Yeah.
So that's commendable from her end.
Mm-hmm.
And coming to the economic system now, where we are as business people, I think the economic system that we currently have is honestly not speaking mostly for Black people.
Yeah.
It's not speaking for us.
Mm.
When you look at the banking institutions, who owns these banking institutions? Definitely it's not us.
Mm.
Insurance companies, all these big companies, car dealership, you know, that are really thriving. We don't own them. And why? It's because of the system. Even if you want to purchase now a dealership or to own a bank, the system will throw you out as a Black. So it's like there are no opportunities. So if all this system can be altered, some of these policies can be changed to accommodate our Black people and our needs as well. And coming to the third is the educational system. So the educational system, again, it's tailored to support the economic system. So our children are being taught things that will thrive in the economy, which we don't own as Blacks. So hence, we become employees of those that own the economic system. And when you see the high rate of unemployment, it's also due to the requirements. Requirements can change overnight. If they see these people are, you know, there's no more poverty, everybody is getting a job, then they set the requirements so high. So again, the education system cannot produce such learners or produce such knowledge. That's why we still lack skills. We still lack skills in our country, skills in the other sectors that we can thrive. We lack skills. So you wonder, why do we lack these skills? Are we not human enough? So the education system also need to be tailored in a way that it supports the economic system. Economic system that speaks for us.
And Pep, just now your last word to us, as we can see that the task to grow or to take Africa to the level where we want is mostly going to be on your shoulder as entrepreneurs. What is your word to fellow entrepreneurs, the one that are starting up, the one that are struggling with the system, which we imported from somewhere else? What is your word going forward for to the entrepreneurs in building the Africa that we want?
Yes, entrepreneurs, you should unite. That's all I can say. Because all successful businesses, you know, there's unity. We are working in silos. All of us are like, most of us have our own company. We are the only shareholder in the company. So we need each other. We need each other's knowledge to grow. So we need each other's support. Because I'm sure if 10 entrepreneurs go to the bank, you can easily get a loan. Right? Then one entrepreneur only going to the bank. So, so we need to work as a team. We must learn to adapt to working as a team together, because this is what the Westerns are doing, and the people of color in our country, that's what they are doing. They help each other. Because you know, where there's unity, there's progress. But where there's division, then there's a crisis. And sometimes people take advantage of this crisis we have in Africa, because there's a loophole for anyone to be manipulated or any situation to be manipulated. But if we stand together as African business people, open a mine that's owned by Africans, have our own green hydrogen plant that's owned by Africans, then it becomes competitiveness with the rest of the world. So, yeah, we need to work in harmony if we can only adapt to that.
All right. Thank you so much, Meme Julian. And we also wish you all the best when it comes to your entrepreneurial journey. And Namibia needs you. So please keep going on that entrepreneurial journey of yours.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, ma'am.
Okay. Have a good day.
Same to you.
Okay.
Item is at the Standing Committee on Health, Social Welfare and Labour Affairs of the National Council released a report on the impact of the 2008 and 2009 basic income grant pilot project. Now, the report indicates that the poverty level significantly dropped when the basic income grant was implemented. Just to discuss this topic further, we'll be now joined by economist Peter Franz. A very good morning to you, Peter. And welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Liz. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Peter. Yeah, I mean, looking at this committee, like people can now buy their basic needs. I mean, talking about the cosmetic, talking about the groceries. How important maybe are grants for individuals in unfortunate situation, actually?
Yes, these grants are very important when it comes to the whole community, especially those that are unable to support themselves, those that are unable to get jobs, and also the disabled, the ones that are unable to work. Right? So these grants actually help the households to buy things such as maize meal, oil, such as maybe sanitary pads, cosmetics, and so forth. So in this case, these grants helps these people to sustain themselves. So, yes.
Yeah, and then now, according to you as an economist now, what more maybe can be done just to ensure that underprivileged individuals receive also better lives they deserve?
Yes, so in economics, there's a term where people use as describing where people buy undesirable products. It's like when you give grants to, it's like in terms of money, people tend to buy composite goods, which make buying the undesirable products more compared to other than how they were supposed to use the money for. So in this case, if we can give these people vouchers, let's say we can give voucher to buy agricultural product, we can give voucher for these people to buy maize meal for their and cosmetics or so forth, we can give vouchers for these people to buy books for their kids and so forth. I think in this we will achieve more than just giving out grants. So in terms of money, I think a voucher will do more compared to money.
Peter, this grant is not for everyone, right? So there are often procedures for receiving those grants. What about those that are unemployed? So wouldn't it maybe be better to provide grants to them as well, just so that they can also help themselves? What do you think there?
I think better to extend the grants to every unemployed Namibian, because there were pilot studies that were done, research was carried out, and then the results were actually pleasing, if I would say that. However, the decisions was withdrawn because of apparently it makes people inefficient in the country, it makes people not to look for jobs or so forth. So If you look at this scenario, it's like, I think the maximum this basic grants per kid is 2,500. So this like money that it's not, you will not be able to pay rent with it and buy food and so forth. So I think if we can extend this kind of grants to other also unemployed people, they will be able to sustain themselves during the time they are looking for job. So these kind of people will have transport to go to interviews. These people will have money to buy for outfits for interviews and also money to support other part of their living lives. Yes, so yeah. I think we can extend it to every Namibian that is unable to sustain themselves. It's the same as vouchers. When we give out vouchers to these people and then they will be able to afford whatever they want. At least in this case, we know 100%. We are 100% sure that this kind of money is going to buy specifically this kind of product because it's in terms of a voucher. They cannot get change. They cannot get hard money from that. So they will be forced to buy that particular product because the government wants them to get not what they want, what they feel like it's, it's what they want. The point of the government of where I would also like to give gratitude to them, firstly, for the program they brought up, the internship programs and also the graduates that are coming up as the number of graduates also increasing. So I think it's very important that they also think of those opportunities. That's very thoughtful of them. And also, if we can also extend our thoughts to other alternatives that will be able to absorb or at least most of the graduates.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much, Franz, for having you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right.
There you had it. The time is 31 minutes in the after 7 o'clock and this early morning scoop. Thank you so much for being with me and taking you through the update from the economic angle, trade policy, talking about entrepreneurship. I did that until right now. Thank you so much. And I wish you to listen to all the program today, please, until late, actually. So thank you so much again. And I wish you a very good day ahead. And please do not forget to rather follow us on our social media pages, Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, as well as the newspaper, rather asking the newspaper that you can do that through, by rather sending your details to 081-241-44, 081-241-44. That's a number you can send, or you can save and send your details so that you can be able to get the newspaper. Or rather, you can able to just subscribe to the WhatsApp channel that is the, Eagle FM Media House. And then, of course, you can able to get the newspaper alert every day it's released. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And on that note, from me, Louise Shimi, it's a good day.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel.